In 2022, Team Milk came together by sponsoring female marathon runners for the marathon in New York City. Today, they're more than 20,000 strong. In 2024, Team Milk is making an even bigger commitment to female runners and launching the only women's marathon in the U.S. designed for and by women. The inaugural Every Woman's Marathon will take place in Savannah, Georgia on November 16, 2024. You can learn more and register for the marathon at everywomansmarathon.com.
Chris, have you seen the new Spider-Man movie yet?
I have.
So wait a minute. There's an elite crew with all the best spider people in it?
Who's the new guy?
Okay, sick. So can you tell me, does it look really good?
It looks amazing. I mean, it's visually dazzling.
Okay, so it wasn't lost upon you that Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse came out this weekend. It's the biggest movie in the country, and people love it because it looks really good. And it makes me wonder, Chris, why can't everything look so good?
You're listening to Intuit from Vulture and New York Magazine. I am obviously not Sam Sanders. He's been hanging out with Beyonce. So you get to hang out with me, Sean Ramos-Firm. As we enter blockbuster season, we've been asking ourselves, why do so many big budget movies these days often look so bad? You know what I mean? The superhero battles, the under-the-sea extravaganzas, the giant bombs rolled through Rome. We're going to throw so much shade without naming those movies. A lot of the crucial scenes that rely so much on heavy CGI and visual effects, they don't look great. Even when these movies cost hundreds of millions of dollars to make. How does that happen?
The VFX industry is in turmoil right now. And with 90% of all movies reliant on, you know, using some sort of VFX in them, there's a real shortage of qualified workers.
Chris Lee is going to be our guide today. He's a senior reporter for Vulture and New York Magazine.
I've been covering Hollywood for longer than I care to say, for over two decades.
He's pretty much made the VFX industry his beat, and he's found overworked and underpaid visual artists who put up with a lot from studios like Marvel. They're scared of being blacklisted, and they don't have a union. We'll hear about that in a bit from one VFX artist who's working to change that. But first, Chris.
So, I mean, not only does nearly every movie coming out these days, you know, use some element of VFX, increasingly, that's the main event in a lot of these movies. A lot of like superhero movies, tentpole event movies. I mean, a substantial portion of what you see on the screen is computer generated imagery. And there's just not enough qualified professionals around to do this work.
And this might be surprising to the casual moviegoer. I mean, I know you've been writing about this for a while now. This is kind of your beat. But a lot of people go to the movies, they see some VFX, they're like, oh, that was cool. I like that one part. Tell me some recent examples of really bad VFX in movies or TV recently.
One segment that I know came up for a lot of criticism that I personally think is incredibly preposterous and poorly rendered CGI was in the most recent Doctor Strange movie, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. It's an opening sequence when Doctor Strange faces off against this octopus monster in the city streets of Manhattan. It just looks so cartoony and awful and just ridiculous. Like, the sense of consequence of, like, you know, are these characters going to be stomped to death by this marauding octopus monster goes out the window because you just, like, think to yourself, this looks stupid and childish. So I think that there's been a lot of stuff like that in recent Marvel movies. Like in you know, the Eternals, there's a Superman-esque character who flies around shooting lasers out of his eyes that, you know, people thought was rather poorly done. A lot of people point to the end of the first Black Panther as appalling VFX. So the first Black Panther was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Picture and is heralded as among the best Marvel movies to ever come out. But if you look at the end, the climactic battle sequence, people say it makes no sense. Like, the characters have been doing super things throughout the movie, and at the end of the movie, the physics with which they operate go out the window. like suddenly they're jumping, you know, the height of a skyscraper, apropos nothing. Like, you know, there's nothing to establish that they can do this. And what I'm told by VFX professionals is that, you know, basically the studio ran out of time and money and just thrust the work upon VFX workers who were out of their depth, and they came up with the best thing that they could. But the result is decidedly lackluster and, you know, kind of takes you out of the movie at worst.
Help me understand how that could happen. I mean, was the director not around for the making of the last, what, third of the movie or whatever it is?
Well, okay, I'm so glad that you asked about that, because this is a crucial part of the problem with you know, the current VFX malaise. Ryan Coogler is a director who earned his stripes as a filmmaker at the Sundance Film Festival. He directed a small independent film called Fruitvale Station, which was made on a shoestring.
We played freeze tag today.
Really? Did you win?
They couldn't catch me.
Think you're fast, huh?
And then suddenly he's thrust into the top echelon of directors and given a movie with a 9-figure budget and an extensive computer-generated imagery quotient. A lot of Marvel directors and a lot of people, you know, directing movies in the superhero space come from the same background. They don't have experience with VFX. This is the problem. Like, they'll get sort of rough drafts of what a sequence is going to look like, and they have trouble conceptualizing what it's going to be like when it's eventually on screen, as opposed to a director who has extensive experience working with VFX. So it's not like Ryan Coogler abdicated his responsibility as a director. It's just, you know, I'm told again and again that somebody like Chloe Zhao, who similarly came from directing a movie like Nomadland and, you know, got Marvel's The Eternals.
So the guy that had the van before, he just had a mattress in the back, but I didn't want to keep it that way. I wanted to build the bed up so I could have storage underneath.
These guys all don't have any background in VFX, and yet they get these big VFX-heavy movies, and then they're expected to know what to do, but they don't.
You're mentioning a lot of Marvel movies, and I know the most recent Ant-Man movie got a lot of criticism, too, for just being this sort of garbage feast of VFX. Why is it that Marvel gets so much attention here? Is it because they're making the biggest movies, or are they actually the worst offenders?
Both of those things. So, you know, Marvel is the most reliable blockbuster factory in the history of moviedom. I mean, their track record of success is unparalleled. It's truly astonishing, the number of billion-dollar movies that they put out. So they're floating on money. They have a ton of money. They could, you know, flood the zone with money and surround all of their VFX and CGI people to prop them up and make sure that these movies look as good as they possibly can. But they're notoriously cheap, and
you're calling companies that spend, as you said, 9 figures on movies cheap.
Yeah, and I mean, if you've ever sat through the closing credits for one of these movies, the interminable closing credits where there's like hundreds of credits of VFX workers, you know that it's, yeah, you know, there'll be up to 12 VFX houses working on to get to one of those post-credit sequences that I watch. I don't know if you do. You'll see that there's a ton of workers. So it seems incomprehensible, I know, to think that Marvel would be cheaping out, but they underpay and overwork these employees on these films systematically.
I worked a 28-hour shift. People would drink on the job, or they would use substances to be able to finish the work. And so it just physically exhausted us, probably like shaved off like 10 or 20 years of my life.
It's bad news, man.
My name is Maggie Kreislmut, and I'm a visual effects artist based in Los Angeles. The best way to describe my job is basically Photoshop for video. I have never worked for Marvel. I do have many friends who work in the Marvel productions, and I've heard a lot of the worst stories and abuses that we hear about the industry has come from the Marvel productions. But it's not just exclusively a problem with Marvel, it's a problem with the industry as a whole.
More from Maggie and Chris in a minute on Intuit.
Fox Creative.
This is advertiser content from 26.2 Team Milk and their new docuseries, Running Sucks.
Is running the worst? Yeah. Do you love it? Do you hate it?
I hate it so much. I hate it so freaking much.
That you're a real runner now!
I hate it.
I'm Abby Ayers, a 37-year-old mom from Utah who found herself running across the Manhattan Bridge in my first race ever.
Running Sucks celebrates women who run and the running communities that carry them across the finish line.
Running helped me in so many ways postpartum.
It really is about taking my power back and proving myself wrong.
For every person like you, I'm telling you, you belong, and I'm telling you, you can do it.
I never thought the words would leave my mouth, but yes, I'm planning on running a marathon. I can't even say it without laughing, because, like, who would have thought?
Watch Running Sucks at runningsucktheseries.com and learn more about how Team Milk is helping women runners across the country conquer their next course.
Tell me more about a day in the life, you know, for one of these visual effects artists working on a big budget Marvel movie or a movie of this scale.
I don't want to say it's doom and gloom across the board because there are positive experiences to be had. But by and large, these workers are gig economy workers. They might have a temporary position at a VFX house. The studios farm out the work to outside vendors. They don't have dedicated teams of people inside the studio doing this work. So they find outside contractors, and these houses employ these workers on gig by gig basis. Sometimes they pay them by project. Sometimes they pay them by the month or by the week or by the day.
I was working these long, insane hours without any kind of coverage for health. And so I remember when that project was over and, you know, the vendor that I was working for thanked us for a job well done. Congratulations, you did it. We made the deadline. Here's your check. Good luck finding your next job and, like, you know, take care, right?
And they're also not unionized, which has been a big focus of my work.
Unlike writers, directors, producers, et cetera.
Unlike the person handing a wrench to the key grip on the set of a movie, everyone else below the line in Hollywood is unionized except for VFX workers, which is astonishing.
I have to say that most union workers, whenever I tell them that I'm not union, they are shocked because everyone assumes that we're in a union. Because the post team is in the union, the camera department's, you know, in the union, writers union, actors union, everyone's union.
I mean, given how important they are, they're a key part of the food chain, and they are not unionized. So they have no health benefits, they have no paid overtime, they have no retirement plans, unlike just about everybody else in the movie making ecosystem. But ever since the pandemic, to go back to your question, it's work from home. So you'll have dozens of workers working remotely and zooming in. And basically, the studio farms out scenes. And these workers will, you know, get the specs and they'll look at the pages in the script. And then they'll have to sort of figure out how they can devise this visually and come up with something that will have to be approved by the director. And it's up to the director to say, yes, I like this, or no, go back to the drawing board. The scourge of this process is what the VFX workers refer to as pixel fucking.
What does that mean?
The director doesn't know what they want. All they know is what they don't want. And because of their unfamiliarity with VFX, they just keep sending the VFX people back to the drawing board over and over and over and nitpicking and saying, I want this, I want that, I want the other thing, but they don't know what they want.
The worst directors are the ones that didn't know how to direct. They couldn't make a decision. Or maybe there were too many cooks in the kitchen.
Hence the pixel fucking.
Hmm. I mean, you're making it sound like...
a nightmare?
I mean, it sounds like a nightmare, but it also sounds so counterintuitive. This process you're describing is wildly inefficient, right? You're doing the same work over and over with no clear direction, just being told what someone doesn't want, not what they do want. That isn't cost-efficient.
No, I'm told time and again, this is a terrible way to work. That, you know, if they would hire directors who had a clearer idea of what they wanted going into it, or if they propped them up with people who have extensive experience, you know, with this, or, you know, studio executives who have a, you know, specific idea of what they want, there would eliminate a lot of confusion, a lot of budget overruns, and a lot of, you know, 11th hour production chaos. But in addition to all the other things I've described, you know, like Marvel is the primary offender in this arena because they release three tentpole blockbusters a year. And then on top of that, four TV shows that, you know, like each one being about 12 hours of content. So they are kingmakers in this industry. It's an unsustainable business model, basically, is what I'm told over and over again. By not knowing what they want and by overworking these employees, you know, who are already so few in numbers, basically it's a race to the bottom. And the films decline in quality, the fans revolt, they earn less money, and you know, the population of qualified workers is that much closer to complete burnout.
What keeps these VFX artists in the industry if their experiences are so miserable?
I mean, I'm hearing that there's an exodus from the industry, but you know, the countervailing force is the unionization drive. So as a subset of IATSE, which is the, you know, the big union for all the people who are, you know, so-called below the line workers, that, you know, the non-famous people, the people doing the grunt behind the scenes work of filmmaking, are attempting to unionize and let these workers know their true value. Let them know the strength that they have, you know, that they're a crucial part in the movie making ecosystem. And when they finally get what they want, i.e. health benefits, paid overtime, retirement, you know, a livable wage, you know, not being forced to work, you know, 80 hours a week for 6 months on end, then it's going to be a dream job. I mean, you know, if this gets unionized like the rest of the film industry, this is going to be a sweet gig. And, you know, this is creative work. People love it.
We are craftspeople, you know, like while we might not do it the old-fashioned way with our hands and building sets and puppets, you know, it still comes from our traditional kind of training, you know, it's art and science.
People are proud of what they do. De-aging Nick Fury in an Avengers movie is just inherently cooler than de-aging Robert De Niro in The Irishman. You just get more cool points. So people love what they do. They, you know, and they work really hard, but, you know, the audiences love these movies. They're huge hits, so they want their name on it. I mean, I think that that's one of the main reasons why people tolerate so much nonsense in order to enact this work.
Well, how are the efforts to unionize going?
It's progressing more quickly now than at any other point. Modern VFX was born with the company Industrial Light and Magic, which was created to make Star Wars. And it went from just being a couple dozen people to, by some estimates, around 120,000 VFX workers around the world. There's strength in numbers. That people are trying to organize a labor force. But, you know, what it will take is one of these outside vendors unionizing to show others in the industry that it's possible. And then a domino effect will happen.
The general consensus is that the workers themselves, they want a union. They just don't have the energy to really kind of speak up and, you know, stand up for themselves and demand a union. Because, you know, the thing is, you know, it's, we have to form the union. No one's going to give us a union.
In a lot of ways, the leader of Canada is not like the leader of the United States. Justin is 52, Joe is 81, but the two do share some struggles. Trudeau's been in office for a while, he's being challenged by a conservative populist, and he's struggling in the polls, especially with young people. But now, he's got a plan to fix it, all of it.
Among the $52.9 billion in new spending,
proposing a $23 billion program to get nearly 4 million homes built between now and 2031.
He's got a budget that speaks directly to millennials and Gen Z, or Gen Z as he calls them, and he's hoping it'll keep populism at bay in Canada too. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is going to join us on Today Explained to tell us all about it. Today Explained, Vox's daily news podcast, Monday through Friday in your feeds.
Are there good examples of this work relationship between directors and visual effects artists, or even just the work itself? I mean, Avatar 2 comes to mind. They spent forever making it. I didn't read any articles about how everyone making it was miserable the whole time. And obviously the director is a competent guy, if not like a bit of a raging narcissist.
I'm so glad that you brought that up, because that is really a model of how things can work. It works for a number of reasons. James Cameron is a perfectionist, albeit a narcissist and control freak. But, he would never consent to putting a movie into the marketplace that looked bad or had shoddy VFX. So the bulwark against doing that is to budget as much time and money as needed. And, the box office returns speak for themselves. I mean, The Way of Water crushed it.
Now, James Cameron, of course, Avatar 2 out in theaters now, about to cross $2 billion. You have
hopefully, a few weeks from now.
Hopefully, I'm saying it. I'm predicting
okay, thank
it.
You.
Generally speaking, everyone loved the VFX. I mean, I've heard some people deride it as, it looked like a screensaver. But I think it was beautiful and fresh and really the cutting edge of technology. The flip side of that is movies that have a release date staked in the calendar months, if not years, in advance. So everyone's moving towards that release date, and the deadlines can often be untenable, but they're immovable. So if a movie isn't quite ready, or if it's not quite ready for prime time, they just crack the whip on the VFX workers and make them rush it into production. So to answer your question, if more people had the juice and clout of James Cameron to take as much time as they needed and enable all the quality controls necessary, this wouldn't be a problem. But the way Hollywood works is that these release dates are staked out and everyone's got to move heaven and earth in order to meet those deadlines.
Do you think, broadly speaking, audiences really notice the difference between really good visual effects and sort of ham-fisted, last-minute rush jobs?
Yes. And, I want to bring The Little Mermaid into this conversation because, that movie came out recently. It did $118 million over Memorial Day weekend domestically. But I've heard a CGI described as clunky. I've heard the VFX described as soulless. People are saying it's unfinished.
And it's hard to come out underwater, under the sea, after Avatar, The Way of Water.
It's really, really hard.
But those movies still make, as you mentioned, like over $100 million in their opening weekend. Is there an incentive for studios to rush out whatever they've got because maybe audiences will just show up anyway for the nostalgia, to see the sequel, to see where the story's going, to see Paul Rudd, whatever it might be?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, this Ant-Man that you were just referring to is the most successful installment of the franchise. So yes, I mean, for all the reasons you just mentioned, like there's a built-in consumer base, especially for the MCU, where each movie is this, is an interlocking part of a larger soap opera with a meta narrative of characters and storylines that jump in between each other. So there's almost a doing your homework quality to seeing Marvel movies at this point. Is like, a big portion of moviegoers are just going to go just to stay current. But, I think that Hollywood proceeds with cheaping out on VFX at its own peril. The fans don't take kindly to being given low-quality product.
I still don't know how Marvel let these scenes slide into their movies.
They hate that.
Why does Marvel's visual effects look so bad?
They feel insulted by that.
Like, it's not good when you notice something is bad, especially me as somebody that does not look for it at all.
I guess I wonder, Chris, if there's a world in which we can solve all of these problems. Because, it's easy to look at Avatar, The Way of Water and say, like, why can't everything look like this? That being said, James Cameron is
one of the most experienced directors in the history of cinema, especially in the history of visual effects. He's famously hard to work with. And there's not a lot of people with his level of talent and experience. So even if you could make conditions better for visual effects artists, you don't have a dozen, two dozen, three dozen directors who can handle the work at that level. Is there really going to be a day where everything kind of works as it ideally could?
Okay, so forgive me for going back to Marvel, which is my bugbear. That's my white whale as a reporter, and I've been on this beat. They have the money to pay for more time and more resources to make the VFX better. They could pay for more people. They could make these lives not miserable in making these movies. Outside of that, they could hire competent producers to institute a quality control project by project. Let's say surround them with a strike force that has the wherewithal to make sure that everyone has everything that they need, enough time, enough personnel. The money that these movies make, it's not like they're hurting for it. It's just on a balance sheet. They want to say, you know, this is how much money we spent and this is how much money we made. Yay, us. If you took a little, you know, if you diverted a little profit and put it towards the VFX workers, you wouldn't have this crisis situation where everyone's becoming alcoholics and getting burnt out.
And we get better movies, more.
And we get better. The fans get better movies, exactly, Sean.
Chris, you dunk on Marvel a lot in your reporting, and you're speaking to visual effects artists who have worked on Marvel movies. I wonder what the response has been to your reporting from the industry broadly, but also directly from Marvel.
From the industry broadly, I've had people across the VFX diaspora reach out and thank me. The VFX, this union drive, the organized labor drive, they're using my reporting to try to recruit other people into the movement. So I feel like I have my union builder bona fides there. The most startling thing I've encountered is that Disney has not wanted to comment about this at all on the record. So, in the various stories I've done, I've contacted, you know, corporate communications at the studio and said, here are the allegations against you. How do you respond? That's just what you do as a reporter, to be thorough. And they said no comment. And I have no idea if they have any notion to change their modus operandi. Although I've heard, it's been reported that Kevin Feige, the so-called architect of the MCU, is looking into that, but there's been no outward sign of that yet.
Okay. Do you know of any upcoming movies, like summer blockbusters? Have you seen any of the things that people are excited to see, like maybe The Flash?
The Flash and I saw.
Do you know if they're good or bad?
Yeah, the Flash is fantastic. Yeah, all the stuff of The Flash running at superhuman speed is really, really great and original and fresh. So there is some good VFX to be had outside of James Cameron and Avatar. And in fact, in a lot of ways, that director, Andy Muschietti, doesn't have a deep background with VFX, yet he managed to turn in a movie that's quite VFX heavy that's good. And I have no idea if he lit his VFX workers' lives on fire in the process of making it, but they all deserve some credit because it looks great.
Chris Lee, thank you so much, man. It was great to talk.
Thanks, Sean. It's been fun.
That was New York Magazine's Chris Lee. He mentioned he tried reaching out to Marvel for comment. We also tried, and we didn't hear anything back as of recording. In this episode, we heard from visual effects artist Maggie Chrysomut. She volunteers on the advisory council of the entertainment union, IATSE. Intuit was hosted by me today, Sean Ramosfirm. You can usually catch me over at Today Explained. Intuit is produced by Janae West, Travis Larchuk, Gabi Grossman, Jelani Carter, and Taka Zen. Our editor is Jordana Hochman. Siona Petros from Today Explained also helped out with this episode. Our engineer is Daniel Turek. Our music is composed by Breakmaster Cylinder. Sam Sanders will be back Friday with a brand new episode. Ask him how Beyonce was.